Hi,
welcome back to another episode of Heart to Health Talk. I'm Lin, and today we'll be talking about our eyesight, including aspects like eyesight protection, precautionary measures against eyesight deterioration, LASIK surgery, and we'll even touch on autokeratology lens. With us today, we have Dr. Loon and Dr. Anna, the experts for our topic today, new sight. Hi, Dr. Loon and Dr. Anna. Thank you so much for joining us today. Would you like to give a brief introduction of yourself to the audience? Maybe Dr. Anna can go first.
Hi, I'm Dr. Anna Tan. I'm a senior ophthalmologist and partner at Eye and Retina Surgeons in private practice. I was at NUH Department of Ophthalmology for 18 years and left for private practice last year. So I'm now happily in private practice. And over to Dr. Loon.
Thanks, Anna, and thank you for inviting me. I'm Dr. Loon Seng Chi. I have been working in NUH for 25 years. I head the glaucoma section, and I do largely glaucoma and cataracts in my field.
Wow, that sounds really tough. Right. Maybe you can give us like a brief introduction of your daily work routine. What is it like working in this field?
I chose this discipline because it's both a mix of routine as well as variety all at the same time. You have many people who may have the similar ailment, but they come with different severities and different complaints, and you all would want to direct them towards the same conclusion, which is to help them to continue to see well or make them see well and be comfortable with their vision. It can come with all kinds of complaints, and some can be very serious the first time you see them, and some of them can be very mild. So that makes for a lot of variety in the day, and I appreciate that a lot.
For me, ophthalmology is really an outpatient discipline. So most of our patients are seen as an outpatient. So our outpatient volume is very, very, very large. And like what Dr. Loon has mentioned, they come in with all kinds of complaints related to eyes. So it can be like blurring of vision, eye pain, retina, swelling, you know, all kinds of things. And of course, if you have well patients who come in wanting a general eye check, or they want to have, let's say, refractive surgery like LASIK to correct their vision because they don't want glasses. And also the other part that we do is surgery. So most of our surgeries are what we call day surgery, meaning that you have the surgery done on the same day and then you go home. There's no need for hospitalization. The rest of our times we are involved in teaching undergraduates, postgraduate students, as well as doing research so that we can further our own knowledge as well as to bring more information and knowledge into the field of ophthalmology for the benefit of patients.
Right. Thank you for sharing. So I think we all agree that it's really important to protect our eyes. What about eye exercises or eye massage? For example, after long hours of looking into the screen, and then I close my eyes, I do some massage. Does it actually help to improve or reduce eyesight deterioration? And if yes, to what extent do they help?
All right, eye exercises, honestly, don't really help your eye health, right? We only prescribe eye exercises if, for instance, you have a screen and your eyes are drifting outwards. We're teaching you how to control your screen. Yes, then we prescribe, like, you know, you do what I call pencil push-ups. You look at the pen from far, bring it near to your nose so that your eyes will learn how to focus. Eye exercises in the form of like massaging your eyes, looking up, down, left, right, doesn't help your eye health, right? In fact, you know, eye muscles, besides the tongue, the eye muscles are the most exercised muscles in the entire body, so they don't need to be exercised even more. And I don't like this eye massages or rotating the eyes and, you know, turning the eyes in all directions, especially in people who are very highly short-sighted, because the movement of the eyeball causes movement of the jelly within the eye, something which you call the vitreous humor. And that can actually lead to movement and even a tear on the retina and lead to what I call retinal detachment, which can lead to loss of vision. So for highly short-sighted people, please don't, you know, do any of these eye exercises because it really does nothing for your eye health. Xing Chi, you have anything to add?
Yeah, I think both of us work at NUH and we believe in what you call evidence-based medicine, things that are supported by research. And unfortunately, this doesn't fall in that category. I would say the only good thing about any form of exercise is if it takes you for the moments away from your screen, then that's something worthwhile. So instead of doing those massages and all that, just stop using the screen and do something else for a while. That part is okay. But by rubbing and doing things to our eye, those were not things that we were meant to do with our eyes. Otherwise, we will see a lot more eye doctors, ophthalmologists recommending that to you, and that would not be a good idea.
Dr. Anna, anything to add on?
I think the only point on stress is there's no need to exercise your eyes.
What about wearing sunglasses when we are outside? Does it also help with eye health?
So we live in the tropics and there's plenty of sun to go around every day. So I think that sunglasses are very useful, especially if you're an outdoors person. So there are many conditions such as cataracts, a skin growing on your eye called a pterygium, as well as some other conditions that can affect us if there's excessive amount of UV light. One thing about sunglasses I should stress is that it does not mean that the darker it is, the better it is. A simple test actually is you get a good pair of sunglasses, you bring it to your nearest money changer. And they have this UV apparatus that check for the authenticity of your notes. So that is UV light. And that's the key thing about sunglasses that you're trying to get them for. So if you put your sunglasses under the UV light, how much of that UV light is blocked? If you see that all of the UV light from the money changer's UV machine is still shining through, then you know you've been conned already. And just a pair of dark looking glasses.
Sunglasses definitely help if they've got UV protection. So what you're trying to do is to protect your eyes against UV light, because UV light is proven to cause a number of eye diseases, like what Dr. Lu mentioned, cataracts, you know, like pterygiums, like even macular degeneration. So protection against UV light is good. So it doesn't mean the more expensive your sunglasses, the better they are, right? So it's definitely not the case. So if you want to buy a pair of sunglasses, before you buy it, one, the first thing is it must fit well. So it must sit nicely on your nose and not keep falling off your nose, right? So they'll defeat the purpose and not even wearing it properly. The second thing is to check how much UV protection it offers. So on most of the sunglasses, it's either a sticker on the lens itself or on the tag that's tied to the glasses. It should say either 100% UV protection or a UV index of 400, right? That is sufficient. So it's not the darker, the better. And conversely, some people confuse polarized glasses with sunglasses. So polarized glasses just means that they are polarized such that they block off reflections from surfaces. So it's more comfortable to wear polarized glasses, let's say when you're driving, skiing, and things like that. But it doesn't mean that polarized glasses have got good UV protection. There are really different things. You can obviously get a very good pair of sunglasses with UV protection, and it can be polarized. But it doesn't mean that, oh, you look at your friend's sunglasses, oh, it looks nice and shiny and can't see his eyes, looks very good, he looks damn chill, handsome. It doesn't mean that it's a good pair of sunglasses, right? So check when you buy the glasses to make sure that they are meant for UV protection. Ling Chi, anything to add?
Yeah, so the other thing that's useful, I see that some of our panel members are wearing glasses. So there are many types. Even if you wear glasses, you can buy them. Look for the description called OTG, which stands for over the glass. In other words, you can keep wearing your current spectacle frame and you can put it on top. Of course, they might not look as cool as some of those fancy Ray-Bans and Oakleys and other brands, but that allows you to keep your current spectacle degree because that's inside, and then get the sunglasses to wear over or even clip-ons. So there are many configurations. As Dr. Anna mentioned, it's the quality of the blocking of the UV light that matters more. Because ironically, if you have a dark pair of lenses that doesn't have UV protection, your pupils actually dilate because it's dark, right? And they need to absorb more light. So you're actually letting in more light, which can be more harmful, ironically. Only good for people watching.
All right. I think previously Dr. Anna mentioned about blue light filter. Maybe I'd like to ask the difference between like a blue light filter glasses and a sunglasses.
Sunglasses, you're wearing them for UV protection, so they protect against UV light. When it's blue light filtering, yeah, essentially they are actually yellow lenses, so they block out blue light. Blue light is part of the spectrum of visible light, whereas UV is not something you can see, so they actually serve completely different purposes. So your blue light filtering glasses do not filter out UV light. And like what I've mentioned previously, is there really a benefit of filtering out blue light? I think it's still up in the air. We don't have a consensus on it. So if you believe in it, of course, you can have a blue light filter on your glasses so the glasses look yellow, or you get, you know, blue light filter covering an entire computer screen. It just makes the contrast a little poorer than without. A lot of us actually, you know, it's not something that we will agree upon. Whereas for sunglasses, UV protection is something that all ophthalmologists will agree on. Like, please put on a pair of sunglasses with UV protection when you step outside in the sun.
I think, again, the keyword is evidence-based medicine. So if you do a literature search, there aren't any journal peer-reviewed articles that show the benefits of it. So in many things in life, they may have an idea of the benefits. So if it doesn't harm you, you may consider it. But as Dr. Anna mentioned, so don't spend too much on these, because we have yet to have a peer-reviewed article that says that the blocking of blue light will be of benefit. So take many of these things with a pinch of salt as well when you buy them, and don't overspend on these products. If they happen to be on it, think of it as an icing on the cake rather than the main purpose in which you buy them as well.
I really think it can be quite expensive, like these add-ons when we buy new glasses. Are there any other add-ons that would be beneficial when we are buying a new set of glasses?
Yeah, I did have a couple of things I remember that are some tech points for the person about ordering glasses. First of all, you may be asked whether you want a multi-coat. So for example, some of you already have it, like Lynn, you have it, and that helps to reduce the glare. So people can also see your eyes and you can actually see better without the reflection coming on. And when people take pictures of you, they can actually see your eyes as well, which is a nice thing. That may be part aesthetic, but it also helps vision, the quality of vision. The other thing you'll be asked is high index. The higher the index, the thinner the thing, as Dr. Anna mentioned, which is important for people who have very high power degrees, very high myopia. In the old days, we used to only have glass, no plastic. So those glasses were really, really thick, and you see people wearing spectacle bands at the back or hooks to keep the frames on, and they'll fall off and they might break. So those are some of the things. The other thing, of course, is whether you want a metal frame like what you're using or a plastic frame. Now, a metal frame means that you can adjust the legs of the nose bridge more easily. Whereas with the plastic frame, you can't actually do that. So you got to think about that as well. And the metal frame sits slightly further away from your eyes. So that magnification, it won't affect you in the long run very much, because after a while you get used to that. But the plastic frame ones actually sit a little bit closer to your eyes. So in tech terms, it's called a back vertex distance. It means the distance from your eyeball to the back of the glass is a bit further and nearer, and that affects some of the magnification. So if you have multiple frames to suit the occasion and day, you might find it takes a little bit of adjustment. Be careful when walking downstairs or driving or doing some precision thing. In case you are like cutting something very important, be careful of that. The other thing is the length of the legs. So if you're like me and I have a gigantic skull, it also means that I want the frame to have longer legs, so that, for example, I can turn the back of it, which is usually made of pliable metal or plastic, so it can hook around my ears. Because if it's too short, it'll press on your ear, and that's really uncomfortable, because you won't detect that in the initial period when you're in the shop. But if the pressure of the plastic is constantly on the back of your ear, like now with masks, you realize that after a while, the ear loop of the mask is pressing on the ear. It's quite uncomfortable as well. So these are some of the subtle things you may want to look for as well. The last thing is, when choosing a metal, ask yourself if you have an allergy. Because some of these frames contain nickel. And there are people among us who are allergic to nickel as well as some other metals. So that can cause something called eczema.
Right, there's a lot of details that I didn't know. I have to take notice of it. Like, I didn't even know these are the things that we need to look out for, actually.
Actually, a good optometrist will look out for all these things for you. So, because I think you're all very young. So, for older folks like us, where we're pressed myopia and we need to read, especially progressive lenses to help us read, the optometrist will really go through in detail, you know, like what is our reading distance, our intermediate zone, how far is immediate, how close is near. And when you change frames, they actually measure the distance from the glasses to your eyes and also what your reading distance or the intermediate distance is to make you a proper pair of glasses. So a good optometrist will take care of all these things for you and ask you all these questions. The only other thing I want to add is really sometimes they'll try to say like, oh, why do you get like transition lenses? So transition lenses are quite cool, right? You know, like when you go outside in the sun, it changes into sunglasses instantaneously. Then when you come in indoors, it clears. That will be effective for a while, probably about a year to two. And then you'll find that your transition lenses look a little grayish. So they don't darken as much as you go out and they don't lighten up to be completely clear and transparent when you're indoors. So in a way, like finite lifespan to this changing of the color for transition lenses. And they're very expensive lenses. So if there's one thing I don't recommend, it's probably transition lenses, unless you're loaded, you're rich, you can basically change glasses every year and get a new pair of transition lenses, which will easily cost you in this day and age more than $1,000.
Oh, that's a lot of money spent on earth to have a good eye health. Right, now we'll proceed on to the second set of questions, which revolves mainly around LASIK and autokeratology. the first thing I'd like to ask is, what is LASIK surgery and what is autokeratology?
So LASIK is a form of refractive surgery that we use to correct the degree basic refractive error of the eye. So whether it's short-sightedness, long-sightedness, astigmatism, you can use refractive surgery to correct it. So LASIK is just one form of refractive surgery. There are other forms of refractive surgery like PRK or epiLASIK, and also something else called SMILE. So in essence, what this surgery does is we use a laser to correct the shape of the cornea in order to change the refractive error of the eye. So most of us in Singapore are short-sighted, and quite a number also have astigmatism. So we use the laser to reshape the surface of the cornea, the structure that the contact lens sits on, and make the center of the cornea flatter to change the degree of the eye. So that's refractive surgery. And it's a permanent procedure, so once it's done, you know, you can't really reverse it. Whereas autokeratology is a type of hard lens that the person pops on at night when he or she is sleeping, and the hard lens basically sits on the cornea and changes the shape of the cornea while the person is sleeping. So the next morning, the person wakes up, takes off the hard lens, and can actually see clearly because the shape of the cornea has been temporarily modified by the lens. But of course, over the course of the day, the shape of the cornea will start bouncing back to the original shape, so the person has to repeat the process the next night. So that's not surgery, it's just like putting on a hard lens on the eye while you're sleeping. So that's the essential difference between LASIK surgery and autokeratology.
Oh, I didn't know there's such thing as like a hard lens that you pop on. I think you mentioned about how it is a temporary thing for the second one. So what happens if, let's say, I wear it for a night and then for the next 3 days, I don't have it. Or rather, the next 2 nights, I don't wear it to sleep.
So the effects will wear off. So you find that on the first day, your vision is clear. By the second day, your vision not as clear as the first day. And usually by the third day, you will not see effect anymore. You're back to being short-sighted. So when you wear the lenses at night, it will last a certain period. So in general, we say you're meant to wear it every night. So the next day, the vision is clear, then you repeat the same process basically every night. It's not something that you wear for a day and you can go without for a week. You can, it just means that your vision is not clear. Yeah.
Then is it very dangerous? Because to me, it sounds a bit scary, like at night when you sleep, sometimes you might rub your eye and then does the lens actually drop out?
I mean, you're sleeping, unless you're sleeping face down, the contact lenses and you know, your eyelid is rubbing against the pillowcase or something, it shouldn't drop out. So once you're asleep, because your lids are shut, that lens is actually a hard contact lens, will sit on the eye. All right, so it's not meant to fall out. And also the autokeratology practitioner will look at the eyes, do some measurements to ensure that the fit of the autokeratology lens is good. It's not pressing on your eye excessively. It's not depriving your eye of too much oxygen and things like that. Of course, it is dangerous like any other pair of contact lens. You can catch an infection from wearing autokeratology lenses. So similarly, you have to remove the next morning, remove the lens, clean it, store it properly, and before you use the next day, wash your hands, rinse it before it pop in the eye. So exactly like how you would wear your normal contact lenses in the day, autokeratology lenses to take care of them. If not, with bad hygiene, you can also catch a very bad infection. And in fact, the infections that sometimes we see with the autokeratology lenses are even worse than the ones with the soft lenses, because you sleep with it overnight, you know, even if something is happening in the eye, you don't really know that something is happening in the eye. So I would say that if you are someone with very poor hygiene, then this is not, you know, contact lenses, including autokeratology lenses, are just not a good option for you. We also use autokeratology lenses to control myopia. Right, to control short-sightedness in children. So not very young children, but let's say in teenagers. So if let's say a child can be taught good hygiene and the parents are keen to stop the progression of myopia, so sometimes we do prescribe autokeratology lenses to retard the progression of myopia. So this is another way how we use auto-K lenses. Yeah.
Is there a specific degree range that is optimal for like K lens?
Usually, it can correct with a whole range of degrees, so from very low to very high. But in general, I mean, if you're very, very low degree, like 100, 200, most people won't even bother to wear anything. You just kind of like, you know, put on glasses when you need in class. And the rest of the time, you kind of like walk around in the blur, but you can still see things. So usually, people start wearing these lenses when they've got moderate myopia, right, 400, 500 degrees, but you can fit them even for very high degrees. So it actually can correct for wide range of refractive errors. And these lenses are customized accordingly based on the degree of the person.
What about the price range, and is it very accessible in Singapore itself?
I think it's a couple of $100 a pair. It's not meant to be disposed of, like, you know, daily disposable. So you use them for at least a year to two and you bring them back, and the practitioner will ask you to go back regularly to check and make sure that your lenses are fine, they're not scratched, and your eyes are in good health. So there's actually a fixed schedule that they'll ask you to go back and get your eyes checked at least on an annual basis, if not more often. And you wear the same pair of lenses until, let's say, they're scratched or there's a lot of build up on the lens and you need a change in your auto-K lenses. So they are meant to be worn kind of like semi-permanently. I would say the price range is not prohibitively expensive. I mean, if you consider you change your glasses or you wear your disposable contact lenses, it also come up to a couple hundred dollars a year. So I don't think the price is really something that's prohibitive to most people.
I see. Thank you for the information, Tazfa. Maybe I can go back to the LASIK surgery. Can I know what are the pros and cons, in your opinion, of a LASIK surgery?
I think the pros of LASIK surgery is if, like, you get perfect vision and no degree at the end of it. I was like, wow, you know, your life has changed. So when I did surgery for my siblings or some of my classmates, they're like, wow, this is the best money spent in my life. Like, you go to bed in a blur, you wake up, oh, I can see clearly. I don't need my glasses. So the world is beautiful. So they say it's the best money to spend in your life. So that is if everything goes well. But like everything in life, you know, it's still surgery. It is one of the safest form of eye surgery, but it does not mean that there are no potential complications. In fact, I think the biggest con of refractive surgery, including LASIK, is dry eyes. After the laser procedure, most of us will have dry eyes for at least 6 months, sometimes a year. But there's a significant proportion of people who actually have permanent dry eyes after the procedure. So imagine your degree can be perfect, but your eyes always feel tired, always feel scratchy, like there's a foreign body in your eye, the eyes turn red, and that's not very good. Even though the vision may not be very affected, it just does not feel comfortable. So one of the biggest cons with refractive eye surgery is the risk of permanent dry eyes after the procedure. The other thing that happens is that there's also a risk of getting visual disturbances, especially at night, like what you call glare. Halos around light. So if you look at the street lamp at night, instead of it being round and focused, you see that all these rays of light radiating out. So that can happen after having refractive surgery. Also, there's also a risk of undercorrection, meaning that you want to treat 200 degrees, but your correction ended up only 200 degrees, so you have an undercorrection. Or if overcorrection, so instead of treating 200 degrees, you got 400 degrees treated. So your correction is not perfect. So you might need to go in and do the surgery a second time. And other things can happen is regression. Regression is the degree coming back after a successful surgery. So, for instance, I've corrected this person to perfect vision, 0 degrees, and this person appears again after 10 years. They say, my vision isn't as good. And then when I check, oh, he's short-sighted again. That's called regression. So the degree can come back years after the correction. So these are some of the cons to refractive surgery.
Right, I actually heard that it's better if you make sure that your degree has stabilized before going for LASIK surgery. How true is this? And maybe you can elaborate on this.
It's absolutely true. So if your degree is still increasing, there's no point chasing an increasing number. So for instance, if your degree is still increasing by 50-100 degrees a year, let's say 100 degrees a year, so maybe 200 now, I treat 200. Next year, it increased by 100, you're still 100 degrees short-sighted. So unless your degree is stable, why go for surgery? You're just chasing a number that is not stabilized. So your degree must have stabilized for, I would say, a minimum of 6 months, preferably a year, right, before you go for refractive eye surgery, right? If not, you're just wasting your money.
What about the price-wise and how accessible is it in Singapore?
LASIK, the price has come down tremendously in these years. I remember when I started doing LASIK more than a decade ago, it was a lot more expensive. I think now, depending on the exact procedure that you're doing, I think roughly, it will cost about $2,000 to $3,000 plus dollars per eye. But it really depends on the exact procedure you go for, whether you go for what you call PRK or epiLASIK, LASIK itself or SMILE. And really, the eye doctor that checks your eyes will recommend the best procedure for you to do. For instance, if let's say your degree is very, very high, then you may not be able to do PRK, right? Because it's beyond the treatment range. Or similarly, if let's say your degree is very high, then you may not be able to do SMILE. So really depends on your lifestyle and your exact degree, then the price varies according to the exact procedure that you go for.
Mm. What about the age range? Is there any specific age requirement? Like, let's say a person who is 50 plus 60 years old. Is it suitable, like this form of surgery?
You can do LASIK on essentially anyone. It's just that, say, when you are very young and your degree is not stable, most of us, the degree stabilizes in late teenage, early adulthood. So most of us, by the age of, let's say, 21, arbitrary, the degree should stabilize. But if you're one of those unique people where your degree is still increasing, then please don't go for LASIK yet until it's stabilized. Yeah. I don't like to do LASIK on very young people, like, you know, 18, 19, because there's still a risk that the degree can still increase because the degree is not really stable even at the age. So the person can swear, say, oh, my degree hasn't increased for a year. I generally don't like to do them at a very young age because the risk of regression or the degree coming back is really higher. I've seen my own classmate in medical school, you know, started medical school first year with 100 degrees, finished medical school with 400 degrees. So it can still increase, right, in early adulthood, especially if you're studying a lot and you're always focusing on something that's near. So until you're really sure and the degree has stabilized, please don't go for surgery. When you reach, let's say, a ripe old age like myself or Dr. Loon's age, then LASIK surgery can be done. But I wouldn't recommend myself or Dr. Loon to get it done because we have presbyopia. So if I don't treat my myopia, I can take off my glasses and I still read. So if I say I do LASIK and treat my myopia, so now I've got 0 degrees, I cannot read anything. I need to put on reading glasses. So what's the point of having LASIK done? I still need to wear glasses. That's stupid, right? So I look beautiful and meet someone, say, hey, you know, like, oh, can we exchange phone numbers? The next thing is I whip out my reading glasses. Then everyone will know my age. That's not very good. So when you're old and have presbyopia, it is not a very good procedure. Some of us overcome it by doing what we call monovision. That means we treat one eye to 0 degrees so that the person can see clearly for distance in that eye but cannot read in that eye. Then the other eye will undercorrect the degree such that the person is still short-sighted, let's say 150 degrees, so can still read. So one eye sees far and one eye sees near. So that's called monovision. So that's how we get around the people who still want to have LASIK when they become presbyopic. Yeah. But that's an option only for short-sighted people. If you're long-sighted, then I don't think that option is possible for the person at all. Bear in mind also, when you hit the age of 50, 60s, we tend to start having other eye problems, usually like in the form of cataracts. So when you start getting cataracts, which is an opacity in your own natural lenses, the degree of the eye changes again. So your degree can be very stable for many, many years in adulthood until your cataracts start forming and you may find that your degree starts to change again. So that's another reason why we don't actually want to do refractive surgery for older folks, because when you start getting a cataract and your degree starts to change, then again, it's chasing a target that's shifting frequently. So there's no point chasing that anymore. So we usually tell the person, be patient. When the cataract gets really significant, we will remove it and give you perfect vision again. Because this time around, when we do the cataract surgery, we put in intraocular lenses, right, to correct for your short-sightedness, astig, and your presbyopia and everything to give you perfect vision again. Yeah, so if, let's say, for older folks, my advice is hold on. You know, if you develop cataracts, we deal with it in a different way. And please don't go for LASIK anymore.
Right, I actually didn't know that when you go for cataract surgery, it actually gives you like a perfect sight after that. That was really eye-opening. All right, I think we have come to the end of today's episode. Thank you, Dr. Loon and Dr. Anna, for your time with us here today. It was definitely really informative. And yeah, I really gained a lot of insights from today's session. Thank you for listening to today's episode of Heart to Health Talk. We hope you enjoyed and found our discussion helpful. If you found today's episode helpful, do join us next week where we'll be talking about new skin, where we'll be interviewing experts on hair care. If you want to find out more about Heart to Health Talk, head over to our Instagram at HEARTTO HEALTHTALK at Heart to Health Talk, or subscribe to our Spotify podcast to stay tuned to more information about our series. That's all for this episode. See you next time.